good morning, all. Mr. Fitzpatrick, do you have a motion?
I do, Your Honors. I'm pleased to be here this morning to move the admission of Haya Citrin, who is one of our staff attorneys. She went to Yeshiva in undergrad, and her law degree is from UCLA, and she's admitted to practice in the state of California.
All right. Hearing no objection from my colleagues, the motion is...
Was it California she didn't know?
Yeah. Maybe Judge Kinney's going to take this under advisement, Ms. Citrin. But I'm hopeful he won't dissent. And Judge Bauer, you're in agreement to...
I am in agreement.
All right. Ms. Citrin, the motion is granted. The court is aware of your contributions through our court already, and been pleased to work with you in another setting here on the court. So we welcome you to the bar of the court, wish you a long and successful career, and perhaps we can retain you in the Seventh Circuit for a while, despite your California admission.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor. Why don't you come over here?
All right. The first case for argument this morning is... of course. Excuse me. Thank you, Chris. All right, our first case for argument this morning is Young Gibson versus the Board of Education. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's just the center one. And keep your voice up. That only records, it doesn't amplify.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Dr. Daryl Young Gibson. I am the appellate appearing pro se and representing myself in this matter. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of the defendant, and I ask this court to reverse and remand the retaliation, race and gender discrimination, and denial of my 14th Amendment due process rights decision. And before I go on, I'd like to ask the timekeeper that I would like to have 2 minutes for rebuttal. When I replied, I gave her 45 minutes.
When the yellow light goes on, doctor, that'll tell you you have 2 minutes left.
Thank you. This is a textbook case,
if
and there are three issues.
No, excuse me a minute. Don't move the microphone. Just leave it there.
Okay.
Don't touch it. It waves around.
Thank you. This is a textbook case, and there are three issues before this case, each warranting a jury trial. Under the direct method of proof, the district court states in her memorandum that evidence of systematically better treatment of employees outside of the protected class is one of the elements for the direct method of proof. She also stated that I was unable to identify any persons outside of my particular class. I stated in my local rule 56B3B amended response to the defendant's statements, undisputed facts. I wrote 44 disputed responses with exhibits, documentations, affidavits, and a declaration. There is sufficient evidence in the record to support the following three other principals, William Hooks, a Caucasian male, Anthony Spivey, an African-American male, and Reginald Evans, an African-American male, were treated better than me. All three of their schools were put on probation by Illinois State Board of Education, and they were not removed from their schools. All three of these principal schools were placed on CPS probation, and they were not removed from their schools. I made reference to this in my disputative responses to statements number 10, 11, 18, 19, 67, and 75. In the deposition, I made responses to Mr. Hooks and the others on pages 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 36, 38, 40, and 67. And yet, the lower court stated that I could not identify anyone who was treated better than me. The district court infers that I cannot meet the legitimate expectations. The operative word here is legitimate. I was a contract principal for the Board of Education, which means that my contract, the uniform principal's contract, identified the expected duties I was expected to perform. These duties were developed pursuant to the Illinois School Code. According to the uniform principal's contract, I was to supervise the educational operation of the attendance center. My primary responsibility was to the improvement of instruction at the school. To that end, I developed a local school improvement plan. I developed a budget, and Geraldine Jones approved and signed my plan. The approved plan determined what adequate progress consists of for the school. According to Julian's plan, adequate progress and consists of increasing graduation rate. Under my principalship, the graduation rate increased from 69% to 88.1%. Julian's plan also stated to improve literacy by 15%. Under my principalship, Julian's literacy rate improved by 17%. Now, these were the legitimate duties and employment expectations that I was expected to perform. However, the lower court seemed to focus on the fact that I was disciplined for insubordination. And the lower court stated that I was disciplined for disrespecting my immediate supervisor, Geraldine Jones, and in none of Geraldine Jones's disciplinary write-ups, and she only did one, two, she never said anything about disrespecting me, about my disrespecting her. However, the lower court focused on that in both her memorandums. I became principal on January 22nd. Immediately after becoming principal, the local school council asked me to investigate an African-American male who was accused of having inappropriate relationships with a female student. I investigated that. I sent my results to Arnie Duncan and the nine other persons who received copies of his suspension without pay. On February 19th, 6 days after I wrote to Arnie Duncan, I received a 20-day suspension without pay. Now, my results basically stated that this young man was absolved of these exact charges on November 22nd, 2007. Then, and also when the board's own investigator came in February, he told me, this is some BS, some political BS, this man did not do anything. However, they continued to suspend this man without pay. That was my first adverse employment action by the board. The second one was in September. A very dangerous young man who had threatened to bomb the school, who had sent email threats to bomb Julian High School in April and May to Fox News, and when the school was not evacuated, he sent the same threat to a California news station, and he said he was going to shoot the students as they evacuated the building. No one knew who he was. They forced me to return reaccept this young man in school in September. I denied re-enrolling this young man into the school. However, Geraldine Jones and the Board of Education Law Department wrote to me and told me I had to reaccept this man, this young man. Also, this young man threatened to shoot, and he identified and emailed Caucasian female teachers that he planned to shoot. Now, I was forced to reaccept this young man into my school. That was a definite adverse employment action by the Board of Education. My third employment action was in November my third employment action was in November when the Illinois State Board of Education denied my use of funds that were already in our budget to take my staff to a conference regarding special education. Because the school was being audited, our special ed programs were being audited by ISBE. I said, fine. I did not have to use your funds. I used my own funds, the discretionary funds that were in the budget. The conference started on January 7th. And I received my notes of disciplinary causation on January 6th. And the reason for this second disciplinary cause was that I did not respond to approximately 15 parents' complaints in September personally and in a timely manner. Now, I would just like to say that information regarding the young man was in the deposition. There was only one deposition taken.
You're in the record.
I just want to remind you that you now will be in the 2 minutes. So if you want to reserve,
thank
you. I want to complete that thought.
In completing this thought, I will return to this during my rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, then. Mr. Walters?
Good morning, Your Honors. Matthew Walters on behalf of the defendant, Appalachian Board of Education of the City of Chicago. We'd ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment. The plaintiff's entire claim should be barred by the doctrine of claim preclusion. This court has said that required that when litigants seek circuit court review of administrative proceedings that may also implicate federal civil rights claims, that those civil rights claims must be joined. Every claim that we've heard today and that has been brought up in this case could have been brought in the state court. Plaintiff sought review in the Circuit Court of Cook County. She failed to join her federal civil rights claims at that time, even though it was allowed and indeed mandated by federal case law and the Illinois Administrative Review Act. Claim preclusion is designed to preserve the limited judicial resources. Here, the board and five distinct venues have had to spend time resolving this matter. It's gone before an administrative hearing, the Circuit Court of Cook County, the First District Court, Appellate Court in Illinois, the Northern District of Illinois, and now here, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Claim preclusion should bar the entire claim. If you have any specific questions about the discrimination aspect of this, I'm happy to answer them now. Otherwise, I would just like to close and reiterate that from the briefs, plaintiffs has failed to show discrimination or retaliation using either the direct or the indirect method. It's clear that she did not meet the board's legitimate expectations through her repeated insubordination and the State Board of Education finding her incapable of leading her school. She's failed to present any valid comparators. None of the individuals she's listed had the same or similar misconduct that she engaged in. Those aren't valid. The district court should be affirmed. If you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Walters, Doctor.
The board began his testimony talking about res judicata in the state of Illinois. Res judicata is used when all the administrative reliefs have been exhausted, and the lower court dedicated possibly 4 or 5 pages to res judicata. And according to the circuit court, my claim precluded res judicata my claim was not barred by res judicata because my circuit court action was a two-charge action, and the appellate court and the lower court only acted on one claim. They did not act on one count. They did not act on the second count. They only acted on one count. So the lower court stated that my claim was not barred by res judicata. Now, secondly, I'd like to say that there was only one deposition taken. That was the deposition that the board took of me. And when the board wrote one of their memorandums regarding this, the board did not. Am I done?
No, not until the red light goes on.
Okay. And when the board evidence in, the board supposedly included the entire deposition. Now, I know under Federal Rule of Civic Procedure 32, you can either put in the entire deposition or you can put in parts. The board supposedly put in the entire deposition from page 1 to page, I believe it's 135, but the board significantly deleted pages 99 to 131. Pages 99 to 131 gives my information about the dangerous young man. It gives more information about the stress that I went through. It gives a lot of information that is supportive of what I'm saying. And we went to before the lower court to ask for, no, I put in a motion before this court and requested that they put include these pages. And they asked that me, they stated that I had to go to the lower court, which I did. We went to the lower court on March 3rd this year, and then we had to return on March 10th. And I had the transcript placed in the record where the honorable judge said that she would get back to us in a few days. We are still waiting. I am still waiting for her response. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the second case of the day.